Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to violence.
Welcome to Lost in the Static.
What he said.
Yeah, so here we are, brand new studio. What do you think, Josh?
You promised me this would not turn into the old studio with clothes all over the floor and cats everywhere. It has.
Hi, cat.
So, yeah, you lied to me.
I did not lie to you. It has not turned into the old studio. You have a comfy chair.
Yes, I do have a comfy... I'm not sitting on a freaking metal folding chair anymore. Yay! After only 143 episodes, I finally get a comfy chair. Imagine that.
Yes, well, you know, some people would be happy to know that you were in discomfort for 140, well, really, about 140 episodes, because some you recorded from your house.
Like last week.
Exactly.
But if people really want to get comfortable, they can go to adamandeve.com.
Yes.
Use the promo code STATIC to get 50% off of a single item, 3 free DVDs, a free mystery gift, and free U.S. shipping. Screw you Canadians and foreigners. Promo code STATIC.
That's the American attitude right there.
Merca, fuck yeah! What?
Nothing. So, I've been moving. You've been hanging out with Wesmar.
Yes.
Which I'm kind of jealous I missed that. He's always fun.
He is.
Yes.
And we mentioned a few weeks ago that we were going to be starting a large project. And we actually got a couple of projects. We're taking the show not in a new direction, but... we're going to have a whole series of episodes that will tackle one ideal from different perspectives or different aspects of various ideals. After the one we're going to do now, which is going to be the decades, we're going to be delving very deep into pewters.
Yes.
The different aspects of pewters, what they've done for society, hackers, the upsides, the downsides. We'll have a whole series on that.
And we'll be starting with Babbage.
Shut up.
What? I'm not kidding. We'll be starting with Babbage.
Well, but before that, we're gonna do a decades.
Right.
Tonight, we're going to look at the 1970s. The good, the bad, the fashions, the movies, the porn, the music, the pop culture, the social injustices,
yep.
All of it.
Just a little bit of everything about the 1970s. Now, I have to admit, you and Brad... for those curious, did an excellent job on decade retrospectives as far as movies went.
Yeah, so we're not going to spend a ton of time on movies, but there are certain milestones we have to mention in each decade.
But if we have anybody that is curious and would like to delve into the movies, I highly recommend those episodes of Radiodrome.
Yeah, and if you guys didn't like the 1990s episode Scott and I did, you won't like the Radiodrome Brad and I did on it.
Yeah, I like Brad the more I listen to him.
He hates the 90s like you wouldn't believe.
He hates the 90s, but for the right reasons. He doesn't hate all of the 90s. But anyway, we're 20 years late, so yeah. let's move into the 1970s.
Okay, now, full disclosure, you and I were only alive for half of the 70s.
I was going to say nothing of any interest happened from 1971 to 1974.
Yeah, except Watergate and...
No.
Nom.
Not important.
Gas crisis.
No.
Nothing?
Nothing. Not until February of 1975.
When each of us was born. So, but I mean, just in full disclosure, we have to say we only actually experienced the second half of the 70s. And even then, we were little kids. So I don't know how much memories you have of the 70s. I have certain specific memories of a specific thing that I remember going to, being at, watching, experiencing, but not a whole lot because I was fucking five when the 70s were over.
Yeah, I think my earliest memories, a real solid memory, was New Year's 79 into 80.
That was a big deal, too. I mean, the whole country, big deal of that one.
I was in Sydney, Australia.
Still, you're American, though.
Well, yeah, but I was in Sydney, Australia at the time, and hotel room with red shag carpeting.
It was still the 70s.
It
so
was.
Shags.
It really was.
Well, let's transition from that then into the fashions or the fashion victims as the '70s are now seen.
Now, to me, when we talk about color in the '70s, there are two ways that you can go and just scream 1970s. One,
pastels.
Well, kind of. You can clash like you wouldn't believe. Red checks and blue stripes. That kind of a deal, you know.
The kind of shirt where you go, does that thing get TV signals? Jesus, man.
Exactly. The kind where, you know, somebody stopped and thought, why don't we turn a tablecloth into a suit jacket? And so you end up with things like gingham suits with stripy pants and stuff like that. Now,
wasn't that the birth of pleather also?
Yes, also the 70s? Birth of pleasure.
Pleather.
And it was an interesting goal, because you got to remember also in the '70s, man-made was just the shit, plastics and everything, you know. I got one word for a secure future, kid: plastics, you know. And that's, so they made a suit out of plastics, and you ended up with the leisure suit that you could just kind of pour liquids down. And
the leisure suit.
Yeah.
I just picture William Shatner murdering girls in that in the movie Impulse.
But yeah, man-made fabrics were the thing. And so you ended up with all of these colors that they couldn't get in natural fabric. And
that's kind of the problem. That doesn't exist in nature, and it shouldn't.
And you saw, you saw something similar in the 90s when the neon dyes.
Yeah, hit. We'll get to that.
You know, we'll get to that, but Just as a comparison, you know, you had all of these colors that you couldn't have before. The other way that you could go, and this is what happened mainly in the Midwest: avocado,
yeah,
sunset yellow, or what was the other word for it? But there was avocado everything.
Well, the yellow always kind of had a pukey tone yeah. to it.
Well,
you know?
So does avocado, frankly.
Yeah. Okay.
But fair I mean. Enough. You know, that was the height of... Now, when you talk about appliances, you've got stainless steel, black, white. Those are the main colors that you see them in.
Well, for appliances, you also had, remember, like the Atari and the early VCRs, wood grain. Yes, you knew exactly where I was going. '70s were the wood decade.
Oh, yeah. In fact, I think one of the best cars I remember... It was a neighbor's car, and it was a...
Was it a panel, like, station wagon?
It was a 1977 panel station wagon, and it was the one with the seat in the back that faced backwards. So, you know, sitting back there was a great big deal, because you kind of had this big view out that huge-ass back window.
Well, but there was also fashion issues, like bell-bottoms. Okay.
Yeah.
Bell-bottoms... Keep in mind, Scott and I turned 5 by the time these things died out.
Yeah.
Bell bottoms just, they're a bad idea from inception, aren't they?
I don't even know what, and for our English, or not just English, but European listeners, flares, bell bottoms or flares, as they were known over there. I don't even know, was there a practical purpose to them?
I think they allowed, when you walked, it made a whoosh whoosh sound, so it kind of made you like, if you were gonna, I'm gonna strut. It kind of drew attention to you, I guess.
Okay.
I don't know. I've never worn bell bottoms, but they are hideous. They look terrible, and sickeningly enough, they've made a comeback. You see hipsters in bell bottoms now because it's like cool, man. Oh, it's really cool.
Well, it's the 20 or 30 year rule.
Bell bottoms. Now, the thing I did like, especially looking back at it, I love 70s chick hair. I love like the Farrah and stuff. Chicks are so like, even that's one I'm not ashamed when I see out on the street today.
Mm-hmm.
That 70s do on like some 30-year-old chick, that's fucking hot, man.
The super feathered,
yeah, that
look.
I'm sorry, that's fucking
now,
hot.
Now, what about the other way that they went? The long, straight, flat.
The hippie chick hair.
The Jan Brady.
And see, that's not so bad. It depends on the girl. Some girls can pull that off, some can't.
You're right.
But it depends on the girl.
Right.
And I don't know. I find the '70s chick hair really hot. So
okay,
sorry.
No, that's no need to apologize. I don't blame you.
Well, and speaking of that, then why don't we transition from that, since we mentioned the Farrah, to 70s TV.
Now,
Jigglevision?
I'm okay. I will concede here, because for the most part I don't care for the 70s. I
know that. I know next week and the week after are going to be where you're going to shine.
Right.
I get that.
But some great TV came out of the 70s. Really good TV.
And a lot of shit came out of the 70s too.
Well, yeah, I mean, that could be said of any decade though. I mean, look at the 80s. Some great TV came out of the 80s. A lot of shit came out of the 80s. But
I mean, TV, now you got to remember, it wasn't as democratized, arguably, as it is today, because cable was in its real infancy right at the end of the 70s. So
right.
You had the three networks, no Fox, PBS doesn't really count as a network. So you had ABC, CBS, NBC. Now, they chose what you were going to watch and the order you were going to watch it. And that's pretty much all you had. You had a couple of locals, but they didn't, you know, they were basically reruns or local talk shows that were really poorly produced.
Right.
And, okay, you want to talk how vanilla the 80s were for TV? The 70s were worse. You couldn't show gunshots going, you know, you couldn't show somebody getting shot. I mean, you could show them getting shot, like, I'm shooting in your direction, and then I fall down.
Yeah,
that's the extent of like a gunshot on 70s television.
The 1970s gunshot of I immediately reach up and cover my non-existent gunshot with my hand.
Or if you're in a Western, the instantaneous death.
Yes.
Doesn't matter where you're shot. Every bullet is instant death, like they're coated in cyanide or something.
Yes.
I always love that from like the Rifleman and that. Boom, boom, boom. Everybody's dead no matter where they get hit.
Exactly.
They get hit in the shoulder and they're just dead.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. Blow a kneecap off, dead.
Yeah, that's something I've always loved. But you started to see, and I think this is the reason that cable took off so much in the 80s. People were sick of, I don't want to watch Charlie's Angels at 8 p.m. on a Thursday night.
Mm-hmm.
How about you let me decide? How about you give me a little bit of credit? Because TV was kind of dumb in the 70s, too. The mainstream stuff. It wasn't challenging you.
Well, what was Fantasy Island 70s?
Yes.
That? Okay, well, you know.
Not really a challenging.
No.
It's still Aaron Spelling bullshit.
Yes.
Aaron Spelling is the death knell of good television, man. He always has been.
Well, now, what about Archie Bunker?
See, but then you had ones like Archie Bunker, which... 71. Can you believe that that's that early?
No, I no.
71, you got something like All in the Family that you'd never be able to do that today, ever.
You'd never be able to get away with that. And the Brady Bunch is still on the air at this point.
Yeah, the Brady Bunch is still there, and you still got the Partridge Family, and you've got all this family-friendly, middle of the road, and then you've got Archie Bunker talking about Black Beauties in the pilot, and then Edith's great line, well, it's better than when he called them coons.
Yeah.
Right in the pilot episode in 71. And you just go, holy shit!
Where did this come from?
England, actually.
Really?
All in the Family is based on an English sitcom that, the name just fell out of my head. Those Were the Days.
Okay.
And they actually made three different pilots for All in the Family.
Okay.
They had one called Those Were the Days, and it had a different Mike and Gloria for actors.
Mm-hmm.
Then they had one, because they were originally called Archie and Edith Justice, called And Justice for All. Again, the same two actors from Those Were the Days. And then the network still wasn't interested, so they recast with them as the Bunkers. They changed some of the jokes, and then they cast the Mike and Gloria that we know.
Ah, all right. And that's the pilot that flew.
And that's the pilot that flew. And CBS was so afraid of that, they wanted a different episode for the first episode. And Norman Lear would refuse to back off. He's like, no, no. He goes, if you do not air this episode first, I'm walking.
Hmm.
He stood his ground. This is the first. They're like, something a little tamer, a little safer to get the audience used to it. He's like, no, that's exactly why people don't want to watch your shit. You want tame and safe.
Yeah. Now, this was also the decade where we saw the birth of, really, we saw a whole lot more blacks on TV in the 70s than we had prior.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, what, Sanford and Son?
Yeah, Sanford and Son. Yeah, Shaft, the TV series. Most people don't even know he had his own TV series. Only lasted 9 episodes, but it wasn't even a TV series. It was more TV movies because they ran in 90-minute time slots. So with commercials, they're like an hour 15 or without commercials. So there were basically mini movies of Shaft that was really good. And you started to see even the real progressive shows like Night Gallery was still going in the early 70s. That would have blacks in prominent roles and things like that, that weren't just the normal thing. And then you had, it's going to sound weird that I call this show groundbreaking, but it is. Mm-hmm. You had David Carradine in Kung Fu.
Okay.
Not only was it the first real cross-genre show, it's a Kung Fu Western.
Right.
You never saw something like that before.
But to be fair, Kung Fu was huge.
Yeah, this was right at the start. I mean, Kung Fu would hit its peak with Enter the Dragon in 1975 with Bruce Lee. But Bruce Lee helped develop the show. And there are two different versions of why they cast David Carradine. One, they said, we can't put an Asian lead on American TV in 1972. It won't fly. But that's not what David Carradine says. He says it was, and you know, he knew Bruce Lee. He worked with Bruce Lee. He was friends with him. He said that was not it. If you've ever heard Bruce try to deliver dialogue, he does not have a firm grasp of the English language. They were not comfortable, he said, putting somebody who cannot fluently speak English in an English-speaking role in an American television show.
Sure.
So it was less racism and more, you're not willing to learn more English, Bruce. But Bruce turned it into, they're racist against me. And David Carradine's like, no, that's not really the reason. I mean, maybe that was an undercurrent, but that's not the reason Bruce didn't get the lead role.
Okay.
But the reason Kung Fu was so groundbreaking was that was the first show where you could regularly have Asian, and it's ironic that a lot of the actors were Japanese, even though they're playing Chinese. They're playing Chinamen, but most of them are Korean or Japanese, but that's
right.
Just the irony of it. But that you would have Asian main characters shown in a positive light. It was one of the first times you saw that on a regular basis on American TV. So that was groundbreaking.
Definitely. And I mean, and aside from that, you had the Urban hit coming out with What's Happening,
which is a spinoff of All in the Family. Well, technically it's not. It's a spinoff of a spinoff of All in the Family.
Right. The spinoff that you're thinking of course, being The Jeffersons.
No, it's a spinoff of Maude.
Oh, it's a spinoff of Maude. Okay.
Maude is a spinoff of All in the Family, and What's Happening was a spinoff of Maude.
Oh, okay.
And then Good Times was a spinoff of What's Happening.
That's right.
So Good Times is still a spinoff of a spinoff of a spinoff of All in the Family.
Right.
That fucking... The All in the Family universe is huge.
Right. Okay. But nonetheless, you saw these black-centered things starting to rise up on television. This from a country that not even two decades prior had said, no, there are no black actors in Hollywood.
It's white guys in blackface.
Exactly.
Yeah. And so that was groundbreaking. So for as vanilla as TV was, you still got those little glimpses. And you also had the birth of something Brad and I have always loved, the TV movie. The TV movie started in the 70s.
And the after-school special. The kids' TV movie.
Yes. And I love those. I absolutely love those. When a 70s TV movie was done right, it was done right. Look at Kolchak the Night Stalker.
Okay.
That not only is an amazing TV movie, do you realize that until the 90s, that was the most watched TV program of all time, was the inaugural airing of Kolchak the Night Stalker? They estimate 78% of all televisions were watching ABC that night.
See, that's impressive.
That's fucking amazing. You're never going to get those kind of numbers today. Never.
No. And I think that the networks, the big three that were around at that point, were still paying attention to kids, too.
Oh, yeah. You'd have cartoons in prime time.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, you had a little bit of that in the 80s, but the 70s, they kind of went, you know, kids are still up.
Yeah.
But TV also, they also took that too far. the family viewing hour. Remember that in the 79 to 80s TV season? For those that don't know, the FCC mandated, which was later overturned on appeal, they found it to be unconstitutional that you can't force them to schedule the way you want them to, that it was called the first hour of prime time, which, you know, we're in the central time zone, so it would be 7 to 8 p.m. for us.
Right.
Had to be not only family friendly, but it also had to have, quote, 70% educational content. So that's why you saw, like, Galactica 1980. They'd be going to like the dam to stop the silence from blowing it up.
Yep.
And they would just stop the episode dead. And the characters would follow around a tour about how dams and how hydroelectricity works.
Yep.
And it was like, oh my God, this is painful. Because that was the FCC. First hour of every night has to be family viewing time with educational content.
It was the infancy and the first mandates of now they call it educational and instructional television. And you see it, the little EITV.
Yeah.
Logo that's up there, and clear into the 90s for a while, the FCC tried to regulate and go, okay, during these times, some of your content has to be educational. And that's where the EITV came from. And that's what gave us the after-school special.
Technically, since education... You can put that word in quotes. You could say Starsky and Hutch was educational because it showed you how to smack a pimp around when, you know, you're needing to get information out of them.
Well,
you could call that educational, technically.
You can, but let's be honest. The real birth of it, like I said, was that the kids come home from school, usually elementary school, because this was still a little too early for high schoolers.
Yeah.
But, you know, the kids come home from school, pop down in front of the turn on ABC, and we learn about Jimmy's struggles with drugs for the, you know, this week, or we learn about, you know, Jamie gets her period and freaks out. I'd freak out if I got a pyramid too. I'd just be like, oh, where the hell did that come from?
Nefertiti? But, well,
she was topless. Nefertiti.
Ah, okay. Well, and you know, and then also that going from TV, you also had the music.
Yes.
Now, I really am not sure where you stand on this. I think the 70s had a lot of great rock, and everything else should be wiped from the face of the earth with fire.
Yeah, in the 70s, this was a decade of just absolute magnetic poles. You were either on one end or on the other. You weren't really in the middle.
You had disco and punk existing at the same time.
Well, you had disco and punk existing at the same time. You had Led Zeppelin and Captain and Tennille existing at the same time. You had, you know, the Sonny and Cher hour and Kiss. And, you know,
Well, speaking, I mean, you know, and this does tie into the TV, but it's music. Like you said, you had the Sonny and Cher, which was a musical variety show.
Sure.
Very middle of the road, very safe. And then you had Midnight Special, which was where Ted Nugent and Kiss and stand-up comics like George Carlin and Richard Pryor. This is even pre-Saturday Night Live, you know, where you've got that on late at night, and earlier in the night you'd have Sonny and Cher.
Or Smothers Brothers.
Smothers Brothers actually, have you ever seen a Smothers Brothers show? They are not middle of the road at all. They were subversive as fuck.
Yeah, but they snuck that stuff in.
Yeah, but they were subversive as hell. They've got sketches that I can't believe made it on television. They got the one with the first interracial marriage, and you know, the preacher's marrying him. He goes, "Do you take the, you know, vow?" Yes. He goes, "Instead of the ring, please." He goes, "The rope, please." Then he pulls out a noose, and you go, holy shit, this was on a like a musical variety show in prime time? What the fuck?
Now, early in the 70s, you had the end of Laugh-In',
or thankfully.
Yeah. But so that existed.
but I mean, the music was just so, like you said, polarizing.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, the late 70s, you had punk and you also had disco. Could you have found two genres that were more separate than punk and disco?
Well, I mean, even in the early 70s, you had the rise. Do you remember that? It was actually a big hit on Sesame Street, that sing a song, sing out loud, sing out strong, blah, blah, blah. It was basically a reworked folk song. So you had this rise in folk, the leftover hippies that was still going strong and now ending up on Adult Contemporary. And it was the swinging 70s. And so, but like I said, on the other end, you had the birth of Led Zeppelin. You had what a lot of people consider the birth of heavy metal.
Black Sabbath.
Exactly.
Ironically enough, both British bands that we brought over here.
Can't blame them.
Well, and you also saw, in the music, you saw more blatant drug references. You saw more blatant sexual references and stuff that you could do on the radio. And you saw the birth of metal. You saw the birth of punk. And you also just saw the birth of, I guess the only way I can call it is crossover. Stuff like Nugent, leaving his insanity today out of it. Nugent, it spoke to both hippies and youth.
Yeah.
Which is kind of a crossover that the Sex Pistols didn't do that. You know, I can't think of a big disco name, but, you know, a disco band didn't do that. It spoke to one audience or another.
Yeah, the Bee Gees never really had a hit on country radio stations.
Right, but Nugent you'd see on rock stations. Mm-hmm. You'd see it on top 40 stations. Mm-hmm. You know, you'd see the nerd at school buying a Nugent record. You'd also see the Burnout buying a Nugent record. You had bands like that. And you know what? You had the Beatles all losing their mind and breaking up and shit at this point and all that too. And
sure.
You know, the music was, ironically enough, more divisive or less divisive than today? What would you think?
You know, the only exposure you get today is to the good stuff that came out of the decade. So really, looking overall, it was almost more divisive. I mean, you had Beatles or Stones. You had to choose one.
I choose neither.
Yeah, I and you had that, the rise of that culture as well.
Which is kind of where punk came from.
Yeah.
I don't want either of them, so fuck you.
Exactly. And so you had things like the rise of the Dead Milkmen, the rise of...
Dead Milkmen's 80s, I think.
I know. But
Ramones Pistols.
Ramones Pistols, but you had bands like Milkmen or whatever playing small clubs at the time. You had the rise of CBGBs.
Yep.
In the 70s. You had... you know, there was this circuit that went, I don't want the Stones and I don't want the Beatles.
And I think one of the alternatives to that, while still being relatively mainstream, would have been The Who.
Yeah.
Because The Who is some hard shit, but the melodies and whatnot are very mainstream.
And then you had the other side. This was very much an almost British, almost exclusively British. They made a little splash here in the States, but not so much. But you had bands that were the subversive folk that was still out there. It was easy to listen to, but then you listen to the message of the song.
Queen?
No. You listen to the message of the song, and it absolutely tears society apart. You have things like the Moody Blues, the Alan Parsons Project, the Eagles.
I would even say Queen, because... You listen, a lot of their shit is very sexual, very drug-related, and yet they're as mainstream almost as you can come.
Yeah, but you listen to Alan Parsons Project or Moody Blues, and you dissect the...
See, but I think what you're talking about there is more prog rock.
Yeah.
Than just straight rock.
Right.
Like, the prog rock had that kind of had its own built-in audience, too.
Kind of, sort of. The rock nerd...
Well, and you even had the weird country crossover in the 70s with Johnny Cash. He's very rockish, but very country at the same time.
Oh, yeah.
And he was, I think his peak probably was the 70s, actually.
And actually, country brought another subculture that made a huge, huge splash in the 70s, in movies, in TV, in the slang of the decade.
Hexploitation?
Truckers. And the CB radio.
Oh, God. We got a great big convoy rocking through the night.
You know, you've yet... But
did you know Sam Peckinpah directed that? Holy fuck. Did you know that?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, Sam Peckinpah fucking made Convoy.
Wow. But yeah, you had truckers, and that, you know, they really became the heroes of the road for a while. And
any Smokies on my tail?
Yeah, their own little lingo with CB really took off.
That is a trend I'm so glad did not really kick off, though.
See, but people don't understand that CB was, this was the precursor to internet chat rooms.
No, I get that, but it was just so stupid.
Eh.
I'm not denying that it had its place in history.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean it was good, though.
Eh.
Well, then let's talk about some of the politics and some of the controversies, some of the scandals of the era.
Okay.
First time, I guess in recent memory, or not only in our lifetime, but I'll say the first time that I can remember a sitting president ever resigning. Nixon after the Watergate scandal.
Well, I certainly don't remember it happening.
I do remember my dad watching it.
Okay.
But you had Nixon resigning after Watergate. That was big.
But yeah, you had, at least from my perspective, I had an idea that something big was going on. I was a little too young to understand what until later in life, to be honest with you. But I knew that something big was going on, and I knew that both my mom and dad were happy to see Nixon out of office. And my mom and dad are pretty much dyed in the wool Republicans.
Hey, even Republicans don't like Nixon.
And they were happy to see Nixon go.
Well, and then you also had the unavoidable thing that will always be associated with the 70s, Nam.
Yeah.
You know, you had Nam at it. I mean, yeah, it's, you know, I don't know if you'd call it peaking in the 60s. I think it peaked in the early 70s, actually.
I think,
because it didn't officially end. I believe Nam officially ended ridiculously 84.
1977.
So, no, I think it was still a conflict. It didn't officially end until the 80s.
That's true. But
I'm just talking on paper.
But I'm, and to me, I think most historians put it with the Saigon airlift in 1976. Of that being the end of Nam, 76 or 77.
The tactile end of Nam.
Yeah, the end of the major conflict, we'll put it that way. Yeah. But you're right, there was still conflict.
And we still had, kind of like now, where the war in Iraq is over, but we're still there. We're still fighting. It's still technically, yes, it's technically over.
But the war, it's not really over.
Right, and that's the way Nam was. I don't think it was officially, and because I remember reading something about it when I was in grade school, that Nam is officially over, and it was in the early 80s, I believe.
When I was in southern Vietnam, when I traveled through southern Vietnam, I was from Indiana, and I had a lot of people asking me about life in the United States. When I was in northern Vietnam, I was from Canada.
Yeah, eh? No, I'm from Canada, eh?
No, it was easier. It was just easier, frankly, because there is still, to this day, animosity.
I think we should invade them right now. Invade them again. Just pretend we're making a movie and invade them. So get something in the win column.
I think rather than Vietnam, I think we should let them be. It's a beautiful jungle country. I love the food. The people are amazingly nice people. Let them be alone. Korea, on the other hand, I think that we need to liberate the shit out of some Kim Jong-un. And that's just...
Why? Are you afraid of his 1977 computer being able to target us?
No.
Haven't you seen those photos?
No, I'm not afraid of that at all. And but nonetheless, I think... I think the boy is getting a little bit too big for his britches.
Well, all right. This is a what the fuck topic here.
He's trying to be the Soviet Union and failing miserably. But nonetheless.
But yeah, you had Nam, which was, you know, pretty much dividing the country straight down the middle. And because you were either for Nam or against Nam, there was no, you know, kind of like you said with Stones and Beatles, you did not have an alternating voice.
Very polarizing decade. So there really wasn't anybody in the middle going, take it or leave it.
But then you also had other things such as, now people bitch about gas. Oh, it's so expensive. It's so expensive. And I'm not denying that it is. How about when there was none? Remember that in the 70s, the gas shortage?
Yeah.
There was no gas. Gas stations would shut down. And you got to remember, convenience stores and gas stations were still relatively new. So
right.
You've seen all those photos online. No gas. Keep moving. Lines of 15, 20 cars in a row, and just waiting for when the tanker comes that day.
And I do remember being in those lines. I remember waiting on gas, even in small town Indiana. You know, there were considerably fewer filling stations at that point, and they were filling stations. They weren't convenience stores. They were,
you got gas there, and then they maybe sold some cigarettes or a soda.
Well, they usually had cigarettes. They didn't, you know, one cooler of Coke over in the corner that you throw a quarter in and you get a glass bottle and
bottle Coke.
Oh yeah. And and the pink bubble gum. All of the Indiana gas stations.
See, you just did it. You said you mean.
Yeah, so. I know. All of the Indiana gas stations and service stations, difference. Gas stations, you got gas and stuff. Service stations, you could actually have your car worked on.
Yep.
And get fuel.
Well, that's the other thing. And we do still have one here in Green Bay, where the gas attendant comes out, pumps your gas for you.
Oh, yeah.
You don't have to get out of your car. Okay. In the winter, I always go to Jeans Rock because I don't want to get out.
But yeah, they had this thing called full service.
They'd check your oil, they'd check your air filter, they'd wash your windows
fluid,
and shit.
They'd wash the window down.
And you throw the guy a nickel when you're done as a tip.
Now, not to confuse people, this was not the service stations of the 50s where the team of guys would come.
No. This was just usually they had multiple guys for, multiple cars, but
right.
one dude per car.
Right. And he would just do the basics, and when you were done, I remember it being a very, very foreign thing to my mom and I traveling when we did come across a full service. When we came across a gas station that was all self service. Mom goes, "Well, where's full serve?
Is somebody going to come out and help?"
Yeah, and I remember the gas station attendant having to explain, "No, ma'am, we don't do that here. I'm the only one here," and it was. Jarring. And now, you find one that's full service and it's just you spring a heart on and you're like, wow,
and they still have one. But the 70s were also the era where, I'm not going to say it was decriminalized in the public culture, but homosexuality was much more acceptable. The rise of the women's movement.
Yeah. Now homosexuality, It was the wink, wink, nudge, nudge, don't acknowledge, but
in
accept.
The 60s, they were still busting bars
right.
and arresting people
right.
for it. That's why I'm saying it was relatively decriminalized to the public.
Right.
You might be shunned for being gay. You weren't going to get arrested for it anymore.
Yeah, and you could be swishy as hell and just talk like this all the time and be like, "Oh, honey, you
Paul
look
Lind?
Fabulous
Are you
today.
Paul Lind
yeah,
here?
Yeah, Paul Lind, and yet everybody expected Paul Lind to have a wife.
I remember the fact when he officially came out, people were like, "Paul Lind is gay?" How did you not know?
I remember when Liberace came out of the closet, my mother was heartbroken.
Yeah, you go, "Really? You didn't know?"
Because my mom was like, "He was so great. Oh, I know so many women that wanted to marry him." And I'm like,
"He's not interested in women.
My mother was a fag hag."
Yeah, but... You had that kind of liberation with that. You also, and I don't know if these two things are related or not, or if it is just coincidence, but the rise of the women's movement and the rise of the relative accepting of homosexuality, I don't know if those are related or not, but I would suspect they were.
They are.
Because women seem to be more accepting of gay men than straight men are.
You have to understand, though, that what this was, it was the rise of the sexual revolution. It was the rise of feminism as it should be. It was the rise of
hadn't gotten to the castrating bitch that the 80s would give us.
Right. It was still the I am a powerful woman. I can still love and adore a man, and I can still hold him up beside me, but he can hold me up equally, and we can walk this world together. They weren't the man-hating feminists that we got later on in life. And so this was, when you talk about the rise of feminism too, there was also a rise of femininity, meaning there was not only the rise of the powerful woman, you know, the powerful was emphasized, but the woman was emphasized as much as powerful, and the female, the feminine, was emphasized as much as the word powerful.
Well, and you also, we'll tie this back into TV real quick. The 70s was also the very first time that you ever saw homosexuality dealt with on television. Remember the sitcom Soap?
Yes.
Billy Crystal's character was the first openly gay main character in TV history.
See, I thought that started in the 80s, so...
No, it started in the late 70s.
Okay, 78, but 79,
then,
somewhere.
But then you also had shows that were not afraid to take on these kind of subjects, like Lou Grant. The Lou Grant show, the episode might actually have been an 80s episode, because that show started in the 70s and was still on until 83. So it might have been an 80s episode, but they dealt with homosexuality, and it was like one of these, I cannot believe that was on TV. That was groundbreaking, the way they dealt with it in such a serious manner without being preachy about it. It was... Because I think the case in the episode was a teacher was fired because they found out he was gay. He hadn't, like, touched any kids or anything like that. They just found out he was gay. That means he's not allowed to work around kids. And, you know, Lou was newspaper editor, so they're doing the story on all this. And it was handled very, very maturely. And that was one of the earliest times I can remember. Because even on Soap, Billy Crystal, the character is still played for laughs. It's a sitcom.
Right.
So even though he's the first openly gay main character, he's still goofy and swishy, and you know, the guy in the Lou Grant was one of those, well, if they didn't say he was gay, you would have never gone totally gay.
And it was the 1970s. You have to remember too, homosexuality is still classified as a mental disorder.
Until like the early 80s, I think, is when that finally got
declassified. 91.
Okay, I thought it was earlier than that, but okay.
No, 91. It was. Yeah, I remember that.
I was
going to
say it was like early 80s, but all right.
Nope.
All right.
But in the 70s, it was still classified. It was still listed amongst mental disorders, and there were still people who believed that it was contagious. That's why you didn't want it working around children. It's because if he talks like this,
he's going to give you the gays.
Yeah.
And this is pre-AIDS, so you want to talk contagious. We'll get into that next week. But
right.
I mean, the worst you were going to get here is a bout of gonorrhea and maybe some hemorrhoids. But I saw you laugh at that. That wasn't too bad of a joke.
Prolapse.
But the 70s were they had a lot of controversies in those kind of ways that I actually think it was probably the most divisive decade when it comes to political thought, political commentary, social issues. As much as the 60s did, I think the 70s did it more. It flew under the radar more, because in the 60s, all that stuff was on the news every night. In the 70s, it wasn't. It was still there, but you just weren't hearing about it as much. And then the 70s also had, you had the rise of, we can't deny this, especially with all the gun nut stuff going on today, the rise of the conspiracy theorist. They finally found their voice in the 70s when they could put out their own magazines, when they would have their own, you know, low-power radio stations. The conspiracy nut really came into his own in the 70s.
And they came in on the back of Kennedy's assassination.
Actually, the big thing was on the back of the UFO craze.
Well, that
because a lot of them were UFO tinfoil hatters too.
Yes, yes, you're right.
And the Bigfoot craze.
But there were because in the 70s the quintessential Bigfoot footage of the creature walking away and kind of looking back over his shoulder. That was shot in the early 70s.
Or late 60s. I think it was shot in like 68, I think.
Is it really? Okay.
I don't know.
But anyway, it was shot.
We're
right
in the
around,
area.
Yeah. We're in the area. It was popular. You just hit your funny bone on that.
I did.
Ouch.
Ouch.
You okay?
Yeah, I'm fine. Keep going.
Good. So it was popularized during this time. It was spread during this time. And people didn't know it was a hoax.
People didn't know it was a hoax till the 2000s.
Right. And so there was this Bigfoot craze.
Well, actually, that was partially kicked off by the movie Legend of Boggy Creek.
True.
The Legend of Boggy Creek was the first Bigfoot movie that hit America's heart.
Right.
Ironically enough, it was a little independent film that cost about $100,000. Third highest grossing film of that year.
Really?
Beat out all the majors and everything. Huh. So yeah, that kicked off after Boggy Creek, because there was maybe a Bigfoot movie or two before Boggy Creek. And then Boggy Creek came out. The next year, there were 18 Bigfoot movies. It was Boggy Creek kicked off the Bigfoot craze. And you also had, to go back to the UFOs, Chariots of the Gods. Remember that idiotic theory?
Oh, yes.
That the pyramids and, you know, we are all descendant from aliens who are ancient astronauts and all that nonsense hooey.
Yeah.
I've got so many UFO magazines from the 70s that they'd be funny if they weren't so serious.
Well, you know, that ancient aliens theory certainly didn't last long. It's a good thing it's not around today.
Yeah, it's a good thing people don't believe in this UFO hooey.
God. But nonetheless, so yeah, you had the rise of the conspiracy theorists, and this too, you may scoff at CB radio, but CB radio launched a lot of hobbyists into ham radio.
That's another one I never quite got, but all right.
And amateur radio into amateur broadcast radio, because this was the FCC starting in the 70s. That was when they first loosened up, and you had those low power stations. And you could get out more than just a block or two.
Because that's something people don't realize, that those low-power stations, you'd have a couple of mile radius.
Yeah.
So you were really, and a lot of these were in the middle of nowhere. So you're really screaming and yelling about the government to nobody.
Yeah.
Maybe some driver that's flipping through his dial might catch you. That's it.
Or
you were just yelling at no one.
Since you're on the AM spectrum, to be fair, on a nice, clear, cool night.
Okay, maybe you could get
30 miles tops. But, you know, with amateur radio and that kind of licensing, you had people from around the world, again, just trying to talk to one another. My dad was at Purdue University at this time. And he said one of his favorite things to do was to go into the Purdue University radio engineering lab, fire up their big transmitter and their antenna, speak into the microphone and set the microphone down. And you would hear the same thing in about 3-second increments, three or four more times. You would hear Dad just literally come back and show up on the radio that he just spoke on. What that was the big antenna at Purdue University shooting out up to the ionosphere. It would bounce down around the atmosphere and come back and hit itself. And so, yeah, you know, that's my dad was an electrical engineer before he decided to become a doctor. So,
well, we only got a couple of minutes left, but
sure.
We got one other thing we need to talk about from the 70s. The rise of the pothead. And I think the pothead in popular culture is what I mean.
Yeah.
You had, this was the first time you really started to see bongs sold in open air stores and things like that. And
no, that came about in the 60s, really.
It was still, I mean, you know, no, but that was that, a hippie shit. I'm yeah. talking, this is working its way into middle America.
What happened in, what worked its way into middle America was cocaine.
No, and that's the 80s is when cocaine, well, cocaine really took over.
Really took off in the 80s, but the discos in
oh,
the
yeah.
70s?
Yeah, the discos were coke labs.
And you had coke and you had meth starting to show up in, just starting to show up in middle America. But you're right. There was a rise of a different kind of drug culture.
Well, because there was sort of the way my dad always explained it to me was in the 60s, pot was okay, but you never did the hard stuff for as a hippie. You know, I mean, you know, LSD, peyote, fine. But I mean, you never shot up heroin. You never did. You know, that was, and I'm going to use the term that I saw in a documentary. Heroin is a nigger drug. That's the way that stuff was looked at. That
exactly.
Hippies are, you know, you use the natural drugs. And in the 70s, you started to see more of acceptance of all that. That, you know what, I'm going to experiment with my mind, which is just idiotic.
Yes.
But you started to see it more leech its way into mainstream culture. You started to see the references on Smothers Brothers. You would see the references on TV shows. You would see not necessarily negative references in movies for right. the first time.
Something other than Joe Friday given, you know, the swoocher or whatever the hell he came up with calling him a little shakedown. You would start to come up with, maybe there's a good guy who just happens to do some drugs.
Yeah. And so you had drug culture kind of starting to break down from what the 60s almost stigma had to it, I guess, for lack of a better term. And you also had the re-rise of the comic book.
Yep.
You know?
The Silver Age.
Well, the Silver Age started in the 60s, but they, you know, you had all the characters you love today, Wolverine, the Punisher, the X-Men, all this, they're from the 70s. They were created in that era when Marvel was still trying to appeal to kids. But that's the first time a comic book fan started to be an adult, too. And so they started to get more serious. So as a comic book fan, I can't not point out that the 70s were a great era for a lot of great books. And also the rise of the real independence. Now, you had before, you had like the hippie books, you had the R. Crumbs and stuff. Those weren't real independents. Those were just some potheads that were making, you know, some cool stuff that they would sell at the bong store. This was, you had the start of the real independent comic companies popping up.
So to summarize the 70s, since we are running a little low on time, like I said, I think that this, even more than the 60s, was definitely the most polarizing decade ever.
Yeah, I mean, the 80s had some polarization, but I think the 70s, okay, now, and I'm going to bring this up again next week too. I think if you did not live in the 70s or the 80s, you can't truly understand where we're coming from. It's one of those things that you can watch 100 documentaries, you can talk to 100 people that were there. It's not the same as when you were there. And that's something that our younger listeners cannot understand.
True, but I hope they get a chance to learn from us and maybe at least get a good idea of what it was like.
Yeah, find some cool TV shows, some comic books, some music, maybe some pop culture from that era on a non-ironic level.
Something avocado, something...
No, because 70s fashions other than feathered hair are worthless. But I think, you know, people always tell me, you know, you don't know anything about the 70s. You were fucking five when they were over. And I go, but I do have memories of that. And like we'll point out more next week, the early 80s really were still trailing and they pulled a lot of the 70s into those first few years.
Oh, yeah.
Before the 80s kind of claimed itself. So, yeah, I might have been too young, but God damn it, I still was there and I still experienced some of this shit.
The 80s...
I saw Alien at the drive-in when I was four.
Look, the 80s weren't the 80s until 1984.
Pretty much. So pretty
so
much.
We still had the 70s at that point. We still remember them, so...
I saw Star Wars in the theater when I was two, my mom took me. Definitely. Jesus.
Josh, where else can we find you?
I'm in the comfy chair for once.
That's right.
1201beyond.com, geekjuicemedia.com, and you're now at geekjuicemedia.com as well.
Exactly. Check out my my column, Set Phasers to Sex, and feel free to ask me any questions you want. And thanks a lot for joining us, everybody. We will see you guys next week.